That haunting sound cutting through your Saturday morning is the sound of a Neanderthal bone flute played by Lubin Dymkorowski. This is Blueprint for Living, and in today's sense of place, we're taking a very large step back in time. Okay, well, this is a bit of a treat. Broadcasting legend, but also writer and honorary fellow at the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, Ramona Cavall has had a long-standing fascination with people in the distant, distant past. Welcome to the show, Ramona. What do you think of that bit of music?
I think it's gorgeous.
It's a nice, haunting way in. But I'm fascinated. Sense of place, as regular listeners to Blueprint for Living would know, is a way of tapping into the physical places that have changed our guests' lives one way or the other. And you're taking us to something that's a long-held fascination of yours, an absolute passion, with the lives of people past, long, long past. And for Sense of Place today, you've chosen a cave in the Pyrenees and an ancient temple in Turkey. What is it about the ancient?
Well, you know, whenever I go to a place which is like an archaeological dig, I mean, even though I would be completely hopeless at an archaeological dig, I once enrolled in the Victorian Archaeological Survey maybe about 40 years ago, but I realised that I didn't have the patience to get a little brush and just go, you know, brush, 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 brush for about, you know, hours.
You're into them in the post-brush phase.
I mean, I'm interested in what did we find out from that dig that you guys were doing for all of those years?
Has this always been a passion? As a child, were you kind of obsessed with ancient times?
After I wrote my book Bloodhound, which was looking through the archaeology of the family and trying to find secret stories that were hidden, I realised that my interest in archaeology and getting rid of the layers and finding out what was underneath is pretty fundamental to probably my whole personality construction.
Well, take us first to the Pyrenees and to the cave paintings in the Neo Caves.
Well, the Neo Cave is in the northern foothills of the Pyrenees, just south of a little French town of Foix. And it's one of many caves in the region. So it was a place that human beings occupied for a long, long time. The Neo Cave has been visited since the 17th century. And you can actually see graffiti from people. You know, we were here 1706 and Jean loves Pauline or something.
Perfect. I'm glad the standard of graffiti hasn't changed fundamentally.
That's right. But this cave is just, you walk into a huge entrance which actually used to hide planes during the Second World War.
Wow.
That's how big it is. You can only go with about 20 people at once and you can only stay for about 45 minutes because you go right inside the mountain range and in fact deep into the earth. You end up being about 500 metres from ground level. And the path through the caves is 2 kilometres. So you go with a little torch because you're not allowed to, it's not lit because of the cave paintings inside. You don't want to spoil them. And it's kept at 12 degrees, so it's cold. So you get up there and you get all your clothes on and you start walking into the darkness along small passages and down rocks and across ancient riverbeds. And we're all in the dark here with a little...
Are you not claustrophobic at all?
I'm not claustrophobic. Well, you know, I probably would be if it was really, really, you know, if I had to crawl through. But you have to, these are sort of walking paths that you can walk through. And so you're sort of slowly taking into this place and then 700 metres or so after you've left the front entrance and you're in the dark and you're following these people, you come across what's called the Black Salon and it opens up into a sort of cathedral-like space which is just as big as a cathedral. If you look up, you can sort of see the top of the cathedral and all around are paintings that have been 11,000 to 14,000 years old.
How extraordinary.
And they're ibis and ancient goats and their horses and they're beautiful. Did you ever see Cave of Forgotten Dreams, the Werner Herzog movie?
Yeah.
Well, that's at Chauvet, which is in the area as well. But those kinds of paintings... And they found actually that people visited the cave for thousands of years because some of the cave paintings, when you do carbon-14 analysis on them, are, you know, 1,000 years, say, difference in between one painting and the next. So for a long time, people were going in there. Why? What were they doing? What did they imagine they were doing?
And did anyone, were these caves that were lived in at all? Or were
they
visited
they weren't
expressly
lived in.
For the they purpose were,
yeah,
of
that's right. People rarely lived in caves. They lived on the outside, in shelters outside caves, and they used them for something. And the pictures themselves, that they used the geography of the cave, the geography of the stones. You know, you see a bit of a sticking out bit, and the artist has used that bit for the back of the bison. Or they've used something that looks like it could be a picture of a deer head, and they've painted antlers on. And then the guide tells you to sort of turn off your lamps, and you do, and then she turns it on and she moves it carefully across the wall, and you see, because of the way the light moves and because of the beauty of the paintings, it's almost as if the animal is moving.
How extraordinary. And so the animals that are depicted, I mean, the cultural understanding we can get from what's painted, is it stuff of the region? Is it stuff that's born out from other kind of archaeological?
They're often not stuff of the region, and they're not things that they were hunting. They're animals from further away. And interestingly, very rarely is there a human depiction. I think there's one human depiction in Neo, in his little grotto. But, you know, look, I don't even understand what football crowds are thinking.
No one does, clearly.
So how can I understand what they were thinking and why they were going there? Of course, every time an archaeologist finds something that they can't understand, they always say, oh, it must be a temple, or it must be a spiritual experience. It possibly is.
It's a safe bet.
We are trying to interact with the spirits of the ancestors and the spirits of ancient gods. Who knows? But, you know, like Werner Herzog in Cave of Forgotten Dreams, he's very sort of attached to the idea that Chauvet was a place where people went in there to sort of get out of their minds and, you know, smoke something and commune with the gods and the ancient spirits. It's sort of an attractive explanation.
So, Ramona, if we can't understand them and their motivation, we can at least get to the bottom of you and yours. How did you find out about the Neo Cave? I mean, did you educate yourself about it and then seek it out? Or did you get taken there and then learn about it afterwards?
Well, I'm really lucky. I've got a very good friend who's completely obsessed with archaeology and cave paintings. And in fact, his name is David Turnbull, and he was my supervisor when I once was doing a PhD in something completely different. But we often travelled together as a group, and, you know, he left Deakin in his 50s, and he's in his 70s now, and he's this international academic and constantly flying here and there and everywhere and giving papers. But he was the one who put me on to Neo, as he did with Göbekli Tepe too.
So take us to Turkey and this above-ground temple.
Well, you know, Göbekli Tepe is near Urfa or Şanlı Urfa, which is southeastern Turkey on the border with Syria. I'm not even sure what things are like these days there. I was there about 4 years ago. And Klaus Schmidt, who is a German archaeologist, was there supervising the dig. He died, unfortunately, last year. And so he took us through what he describes as the world's first temple. So you can imagine this hill. Göbekli Tepe means sort of belly hill in Turkish. And, you know, whenever you look across a landscape and you see a sort of hill that looks a little bit too good to be true, it turns out that it's probably an ancient settlement of some sort. And if you should go and dig there.
Oh,
you know, I've now, like, you know, whenever I sit, if I'm in a region that there's been archaeological digs, I just think, oh, wouldn't you like it? You know, of course, I'm thinking of a great big digger, but that would be hopeless. You have to do it with a brush.
You've gone from the brush to a bulldozer of some sort.
I want to bulldoze mountains.
Cut out the middleman. Like, now that you don't trust topography off the back of being an archaeologist, you want to see what's under it, not the hill itself.
Absolutely. A pretend archaeologist. So Klaus Schmidt took us through this place where, you know, he saw the little belly hill and he saw some things on the ground that he thought were a bit odd and started to dig. And he's found these massive carved stones about 11,000 years old, so 6,000 years before the invention of writing. And these were crafted by prehistoric people who hadn't developed metal tools or even pottery. So they were hunter-gatherers. And then when you come up close, you can see the most beautiful carvings of dogs and scorpions and rattlesnakes. All the dogs, I think they're all male and they've all got erections. So who knows what that's about?
Probably
I'd say
a
fertility, probably a temple of some sort. And they've found more and more stone circles around these. When I was there, I found that he said that he was a bit mystified because they'd all been suddenly buried, this one circle that he'd unburied. And he said for some reason all the rubble around them was the same age. So that must have meant that it wasn't just accretions from the weather and various things falling on top of them. They're all that rubble was the same age. So they must have buried them for some reason at one point. And since then, I read that they've found some other circles just around the hill, and they've all been buried at different times. But and the sort of implication is that they created these things, maybe a temple, they buried them for some reason, then they started again, and then they buried those at
like
a different time.
It's like an ancient version of Lego.
Exactly.
The pleasure is in the building. It's not in keeping it up.
That's right.
Let it all
But, you know, who knows what they were thinking? But at the time, this is a sort of part of the Fertile Crescent, and so they would have been looking down on, you know, a Garden of Eden. They used to sort of refer to this as a Garden of Eden in a way. So I just went there and looked out upon now a region of, it's been farmed for 11,000 years. So it is, you know, it's brown and it's grassy. But, you know, what was going on there and who were the people who came there and why did they carve these exquisite, beautiful carvings on these rocks, and what did it mean? And, you know, and just after this, they started settling and being farmers. So they moved from hunter-gatherers to farming just in this region within the next 500 years.
I'm fascinated by, in this passion for you, the question and the asking of the question seems to be part of the point, the enjoying the not knowing. And yet in the rest of your career, you've given your life to the telling of stories. And that great tradition of storytelling. How much do you want to fill in the gaps, and how much do you enjoy that the gaps are there when you go to a place like this?
Oh, well, you want to fill in the gaps. There's a story to be told here. It's very difficult to work out what it is, and that's I think that's part of the fascination. What was motivating those people? You know, you think of other cultures now. You think of, you know, things that other cultures do that you can't understand. Why would they do that? How is it possible to interpret a time and a place so long ago?
We get to hear from all kinds of adventurous travellers on this show, but you're the first who's actually brought out the little brush and really gone to find underneath the surface for us. And it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you today. Thank you so much.
Michael Williams, it's a pleasure to be here.
Writer and interviewer Ramona Cavall. Ramona's most recent book is The Wonderful Bloodhound. Its subtitle is Searching for My Father. It's published by Text Publishing, and you should definitely get yourself a copy. You're listening to Blueprint for Living here on RN with me, Michael Williams.